Hey everybody, Tom Salemi here of Device Talks. Welcome back to Device Talks Weekly. We've got a great episode for you. A little later in the episode, I'll be talking with Max Kalala. He's the CEO of CMR Surgical. Just before that, Managing Editor Kayleen Brown will be connecting with Maggie Nixon, CEO of Capstan Medical, one of the other cool surgical robotics companies out there. And of course, we'll kick the whole thing off with the New Markers Newsmakers, jam-packed of the news of the week. All of this is brought to you by Vantage Medical. Very happy to have their support of the Device Talks Weekly podcast. Kayleen will be talking with Vantage throughout the episode as well. So enjoy all of that great content. I hope you'll enjoy the great content at Device Talks West. It's happening on October 15th and 16th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Because you're a loyal Device Talks Weekly listener, you can use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. And if you're really, really hungry for great med tech knowledge, make sure you join us this Tuesday for a great Device Talks Tuesdays with our very good friends at PSN Labs. I'll be talking with Mark Birchnell. He's the engineering director at PSN Labs. PSN Labs are great supporters of Device Talks. And the topic is Beyond the Prototype, Real World Challenges in Medical Device Scale-Up. So we tackle all the big problems here for you at Device Talks. Make yourselves available to it. Go to devicetalks.com and register. It's free. You can watch it live and ask your questions directly and get them answered immediately, or watch on demand when it's available to you. You can still ask questions. You'll just need to wait a little bit to get your answers, but the answers will be forthcoming. All right, folks, thanks so much for listening to this episode. Can't wait to get it started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well.
Chris, I got a bone to pick with Minnesota.
Okay.
Remember the Twins game we went to back after Device Talks Minnesota? You know, I got
the
group ticket. I'm still like, I've tried everything I can to unsubscribe from their mailing list, and I keep getting emails from the Minnesota box office, whatever, and like trying to sell me more stuff. It's like,
oh yeah, you've got that for life, man.
There's no unsubscribe button. I've tried everything possible. I did it once and they found their way back. It's like, let me go. I don't even live there. I love the Twins. They're great, but I'm not buying anything from you right now. Maybe May 5th after Device Talks Minnesota next year, but not right now.
I almost wore the Minnesota Twins shirt I bought at the fair, Tom. You would have gotten today. You would have gotten a preview of what you could get. I mean, it's pretty exciting. I mean, you know, like, do they sell a TC Bear costume somewhere? Can you get like a?
I don't know.
Like, he dresses the bear?
I don't know.
That would be a little weird.
You know, but we should get the bear at Device Talks Minnesota on May 4th. Or the gopher. Can we get the gopher? The gopher's a big deal, right?
I mean, we're going to be doing it at the McNamara alumni, at the U. So, like, we get the gopher. Yeah,
gopher's a big shot, good. Right? You want to do a keynote with the gopher?
Yeah, the keynote with the gopher. I mean, I don't know. Mascots usually don't talk. They like...
good note. Yes, we don't want to. Yeah, but maybe he can fire some T-shirts into the crowd.
Then we could get Goldie. It's Goldie the Gopher. Goldie the Gopher.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
get Goldie the Gopher. Yeah. Like, better than at Ohio State, it's Brutus the Buckeye.
Purdue has Boiler Pete. Yes,
Boiler Pete.
Yeah, Boiler Pete. Now I have to go. Let me see. Purdue Pete. Purdue Pete. Sorry.
Purdue Pete. Okay.
Boilermakers. Yeah. Purdue Pete. I've never really had a mascot that I've attached myself to before, so I'm learning. Purdue Pete.
Yeah. Boiler Pete sounds like like eccentric, fun old grandpa or something.
No, definitely, like, Purdue Pete. Go with the alliteration when you can. Go to the gopher, Purdue Pete. And
like, who glued this deck together instead of nailing it? Oh, that was Boiler Pete.
My son told me last year he just happened to be walking across campus and Purdue Pete was walking by. So he said, hey, can I get a selfie? And the Purdue Pete complied. So my son has a selfie with Purdue Pete. So
I think I recall we took the family to a Twins game and we had TC Bear like just segued right by me really fast while I was trying to get many donuts back up to our seats. But
how did your kids feel about mascots? My younger son was terrified of mascots. Some people just do not like mascots.
Oh, they're pretty. They think those are really fun.
No,
yeah.
No,
clowns. Now clowns. I mean, that's
my.
I mean, I'm not a
hated mascots. Absolutely hated them. Like wanted nothing to do with them. So,
you know, that's true. If I I was getting locking up the house for the night. If I looked out front and saw this TC bear standing in my yard,
looking down the street,
really funny. It was a whole collection of mascots walking around.
After this podcast, there may be we're gonna get hunted down.
And have Goldie the Gopher.
Rhett the BU Terrier is going to come after me. Rhett, I don't know if it was a Rhett Butler. All right. Let's move on to the newsmakers. What do we say?
Yeah, let's just do this. People are like, what is going on with these guys? They're just, so here we are.
Number five
on the list. We've got Smith and Nephew, recently announced new evidence, supporting their Regeneten bio-inductive implant. But this is exciting technology because, you know, they're saying it's a collagen-based implant. And, you know, they're finding a lot of good data to show that it can, change the course of tear progression. Help people return to normal activity and reduce the re-tears that you'd see compared to conventional surgery. And I think it may be especially that conventional, reducing potentially, being able to outperform conventional surgery in that way. Like that might be one of the reasons why we're seeing so much attention for this story on Mass Device right now.
Yep. So written by Sean Hooley.
Yes.
It looks like it, is used in rotator cuff tears. It could be used in ligaments. So it's more of a soft tissue sort of implant. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah,
very cool.
The new material we had BioRetech on the podcast last week, resorbable orthopedic screws, cool stuff going out there. Someone on LinkedIn just posted about the podcast and they said they worked up with resorbable, absorbable glass implants.
Wow.
So, cool times for new materials. And we'll actually,
we're seeing,
I will now plug our, we don't have it up yet on the website, but we'll have a Device Talks Tuesdays, last series of the year will be on, new materials. BioRetech will be one of the presenters and, that'll be mid-November. I'll babble on about it in a future podcast, but
yeah, now that I've been covering medtech for over a decade, I mean, when I was starting out, I mean, there were a lot of complaints that we really didn't see hardly any material innovation. And you know, I even remember a conference where Robert Langer from MIT was showing, it was basically explaining all the quirky things that some of the materials used in medtech were originally from. It was just basically grandfathered in stuff that, some doctor back in the 60s was like, I'll use this material from the bed springs and, our mattress to make this thing. And they were still using it, because it was grandfathered in. So, I mean, it's really cool. In 10 years, we've come a long way.
Yeah, we're getting more tech in the med tech for sure.
Getting more tech in the med tech.
All right. What's number four, Chris Newmarker?
Yeah, number four on the list is unfortunate news. Sean caught an SEC filing from Dexcom that, CEO Kevin Sayers taken a temporary medical leave of absence. Jake Leach is, who's, already was president and COO is going to be, serving as interim CEO while Sayers out.
And obviously, we don't want to speculate. I mean, it does say it's medical leave, so we hope whatever required that the leave of absence is not too serious. But the timing is interesting just because Jake Leach is supposed to take over at the start of 2026. So
yeah,
we're 3 months away from that. We'll just certainly hope for the best.
Absolutely.
Look forward to an update.
Yeah, he's going to be stepping in that CEO role in 2026. So yeah, absolutely. So just hoping for the best for Kevin Sayer and Dexcom's been has been like one of the really exciting companies in the space, like just like all the innovation they've been doing in CGM. So,
and as Sean kindly put in his article, Dexcom's Chief Technology Officer Girish Naganathan will be speaking about the future of connected health at Device Talks West.
Yeah.
So go to west.devicetalks.com to check it out. Very thrilled to have Dexcom as part of the conversation. We've been trying to get them for the last couple of years. So, Sean used his might and landed us the CTO. So it'll be a great conversation.
Yeah, it'll be really exciting. So number three on the list, this has been getting a lot of attention. I think this is one of the top stories of the year at this point.
Wow.
On Mass Device, tens of thousands of views. And this was, and this is by me. So I wrote this one. I caught the news of Zimmer Biomet suing Deloitte for $172 million, and it's a tough story for Zimmer Biomet. Last year we were hearing in earnings reports about how they were having challenges with an ERP system that they were installing, and now with this lawsuit that Zimmer Biomet has filed in Supreme Court in New York City, you really got like a blow-by-blow detail from Zimmer Biomet's side over just how at least they're claiming that like the way Deloitte handled the project just cause extreme difficulties for ZB. ZB's lawyers actually said the company was barely operational through the third quarter of 2024 over what they described as a botched ERP system rollout. So I mean, I'd say go to Mass Device, and I have a good summary, and they're kind of doing a blow by blow about like what Zimmer Biomet laid down in the complaint. Deloitte sent me a statement saying that they, deeply regretted that Zimmer Biomet has chosen to go on this lawsuit path, and they're gonna, vigorously defend themselves against what they described as a meritless claim. So, this will be definitely one to continue watching, this story.
Very unusual, story. Don't normally see lawsuits built around this. I think it's worth noting, when lawsuits are written, they're written with a heavy hand. So the worst possible portrayal is out there. But clearly something happened. So we'll keep an eye on this. Yeah, it's one of those stories you're reading. You're like, I don't know what to really make of this, but
I'm definitely looking out for Deloitte's filing in response to see what their side of the story is on all of this. To say the least, how that ERP rollout played out. It caused enough difficulty for. I mean, it's something else when you see like a company like Zimmer Biomet like suing. Suing Deloitte because they say it was that bad.
Absolutely.
Potentially. So, yeah.
All right. Let's roll on to number two, Chris Neumacher.
Number two on the list, Siemens Health and Ears. And surgical robotics. I mean, they bought Corindus for $1.1 billion in 2019. And then, you fast forward to 2023 and they're like, actually, we're going to discontinue, the kind of the Corindus work in cardiology, kind of left the door open for neurological procedures. And now fast forward, to this week, and we have news where they have a new strategic partnership to really get into the neurovascular space with robotics, and it's with another really big med tech we love to cover, Stryker.
Yeah,
so
now we've
definitely
been,
partnership to watch here.
Absolutely, we've been on the Stryker soft tissue surgical robotics watch for a couple of years now, waiting for them to make their move to most likely, we thought, acquire something, although they've had internal programs. I think they must have had it. They certainly had it on the hard tissue side before buying Mako. I'm guessing they had something on soft tissue as well, but they've certainly been out there looking at companies. Andy Pierce said as much at Device Talks West last year. So looking M&A, and then they do this deal with Siemens, which actually, as I said on LinkedIn, makes a lot of sense. I mean, Stryker's going to be able to build something with their own tools. They don't have to do the whole M&A integration thing. As I posted today, you know, I'm curious as to how they're approaching telesurgery. You know, we had Imperative Care and Telos Health talking. Fred Kasrabi talked about the power of telesurgery. You know, we've got Artidrone, led by Leanne Teplitsky, who's got a different sort of surgical robotic neurovascular approach that uses digital mapping and magnetic surgery that isn't for remote surgery, but rather for empowering or giving the power and abilities of interventionalists on site to perform particularly tricky neurovascular treatments. So there's a lot of different approaches. I'm kind of interested to see how what Stryker and Siemens Healthineers comes up with. So really great story. I thought it was a really smart move.
Yeah, really smart move. This is going to be fun to follow. And great, you know, Corindus even in the past, I remember us writing, you know, articles about like Corindus and telerobotics, you know, so they were kind of pioneering some ideas around that years ago. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. And, I mean, a lot of us, we're going to be talking about that at Device Talks West. I mean, we have a really good amount of telerobotics programming coming up at that show in just a few weeks.
Yeah, so. You and I will be leading a panel conversation. We'll have folks from Intuitive and Virtual Incision and Savato and NVIDIA and MedCrypt.
That's going to be a panel.
Yeah, that'll be a great panel. So
yeah.
Those are all the entities that worked on the guidelines that were released before SRS on telesurgery. NVIDIA wasn't involved with that, but NVIDIA clearly, you know, has a view in on these as well. So
absolutely.
Really looking forward to that conversation. It's going to be a really great couple of days. I hope folks do join us.
Yeah.
All seriousness.
I really do too.
All plugging aside, it's like I keep looking at the agenda. I'm like, damn, this is going to be great. We're dividing up the moderating now, and I honestly, greedily, I want to do them all. I'm like, I don't want to give up that one. But
I know, it's like having a really great box of donuts. You're like, I can't eat this whole thing, but they all look good. Yeah. I mean, do I want the maple thing with the bacon on top, or do I want the, you know?
What if I just take a bite out of each one? Is that acceptable? Probably not. No, probably not.
You see Tom just running between all the panels just to catch a little sampling of it. That's what's going on. So
no, we'll have a great team there. Kayleen Brown, our managing editor, Jim Hammerin, managing editor of MDO, you and me, they're moderating panels. So we're looking forward to the many great conversations. So, all right.
It's going
to
be great.
We got a big number one.
On number one, we've got the MedTech Big 100 report launching on MDO. We're talking on Thursday. We're shooting to get this launched today. And actually, if you check out over on Mass Device, I'll be having a story that's kind of like, you know, like with a little bit of information from that report, talking about like what are the 10 largest medical device companies in the world. But this is like one of the most extensive projects we do every year. And you know, we kind of got a little bit of a change going on with it this year too, which is exciting.
That's great. So today is Thursday. We're recording this on Thursday. So by the time folks hear this, likely it will be out. So keep a lookout for it. Chris, how can people download it and sort of what's going to be required in that?
Hey, there's a prominent link box on the MDO homepage. You go to, and you know, you go through that, and you know, we have a landing page where you know, a new thing we're doing this year is we actually, you know, we've been doing this project every year, collecting like just a host of data from, you know, financial filings, as well as reaching out to the companies. I mean, everything from revenue to R&D spending to headcount, you know, descriptions of the companies with the latest news, you know, and just a lot more. And we actually like soup this up even more. And we're putting this into a special report PDF that we have a free download. You know, you just enter in a little bit of information and you can get a free download of this report with just like it's just jam packed full of insights about where the medical device industry is right now. So,
yeah.
So,
I think it's great. I mean, I know folks don't like to fill out forms, but I think for the right things, it's totally worth it. And I think it really informs us. I mean, you and Jim are the leaders on this project. And I know Danielle Kirsch and Sean Hooley and everyone contributes. But I think the more information you have about who's getting them, the better the next one will be. So I hope folks will
absolutely
will take the time to fill out a few quick questions and
you get a reminder to, you know, if you wanted to sign up for our e-newsletters, which I highly recommend. I mean, if you want to keep on, I mean, if it's just enough to listen to like us two, you know, like, you know, kind of talking about the news every week, great. But, you know, if you want to just get something in your inbox every day as well, just telling you what the top news is, you know, this is your chance as well. You can sign up for those.
Yeah. No, it's a great ecosystem and infrastructure that you've built for the device talks for the MedTech world. So folks should take part of it. So the MedTech 100, top 10, any surprises, any shifts that we're going to, don't give it away, but any.
I mean, this is just a sampling of what's there. I mean, just a tiny sampling, but I mean, and of course, like one of the most interesting things was that, I mean, you've got, you know, Medtronic getting ready to spin off their diabetes business, you know, into this new mini med company. We've got, you know, J&J MedTech continuing to acquire, including like Shockwave, you know, which was like a, you know, a major step forward for them. We're really at the point, I think J&J MedTech's gonna like move above Medtronic next year and mm-hmm. become the largest MedTech company in the world.
We will have Tim Schmidt at Device Talks West, and Chris, you need to have a belt made up. And we'll just ask Tim, can you hold that over your head? The big like championship belt.
Big 100 number one. I love it.
And then we'll use it fantastic. On the cover next year. If your prediction comes true, wouldn't that be great?
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, actually, we'll do
I
that.
Love this idea.
Yeah, we'll just, Tim, we just a little this. Higher, Tim. Just a little higher. Yeah, now do the Rocky pose. So
I'm going to tell Jim he's got to go buy one of those and like put it in his like carry on. They're like, wait, you got like a heavyweight belt? Like, what is this thing you're bringing?
Don't
like,
mind just, us, Tim. This is something we require, it, we require all keynote speakers worry, to do. Everyone has
yeah,
to hold
it's fun
belt.
And games. It's all good. You can keep it if you want to. Exactly. Like, go ahead. That'd be fantastic. I love it.
We'll see what we can do. Probably not.
We've got to have fun with device talks, right? I mean,
J&J comms, if you're listening, there will be no belt antics. I promise.
Sorry.
Chris and I are just having some fun. All right, yes, everybody.
two guys having some fun.
Great stuff, no, Chris Newmarker.
Absolutely, yeah. and for other more insights, you know, go, yeah, definitely check out the big 100 report. I mean, they're the R&D spending analysis had some like really interesting, there's some interesting trends going on in that with what's going on with R&D spending right now in med tech, you know, with the big companies. So I definitely check that out. And we've got some companies moving up in the rankings too, like near the top that, you know, are companies we talk about a lot, like about like doing innovation, especially in the surgery space. So we can like check that out as well.
Very cool. All right, man. Great job. Great news as always. Thanks for telling us what's happening.
Yep. Fun as always, buddy. It's going to be great to see you in a few weeks.
In a few weeks, I know. Well, thank you, Chris Newmarker. Now I want to hand the microphone over to Device Talks Managing Editor, Kayleen Brown. She has a conversation with our fantastic sponsor, Vantage Medical.
Cassandra Hoppers, Global Director of Business Development for Vantage Medical. Welcome to the podcast, my dear, dear friend. It is so nice to see you again.
Kayleen, it's so great to see you.
We know that surgical robotics faces a ton of challenges, including lengthy development cycles, supply chain risks, cost pressures, reliability at scale. So one of the biggest hurdles is bridging the gap between rapid prototyping and full-scale production. So with that in mind, Cassie, how do you see early design for manufacturer collaboration helping innovators tackle these challenges and then scale with confidence?
One of the big things that I feel like Vantage has is our First Step program, where we really try and partner with our customers upfront at that prototype design phase to really help them design for scalability. This is something I am extremely passionate about. I always have been. I really enjoy getting with customer engineers and really talking about how do we make this manufacturable and scalable for when it is in production at a volume state? And really trying to shorten that time frame of, okay, here we are in the prototype phase, but like what other revisions do we have to go through now that we've gotten past validation and all that? Now we're going into that scalability production setting. Like we try and just get that up front like, how do we work together as a team, as a true partnership between customer and us, Vantage, of, you know, making that happen. And again, our first step program is that, and it really just leans into the expertise that we both have.
Thank you to this episode sponsor, Vantage Medical. Without your support, we aren't able to produce Device Talks Weekly or tell these important stories. So thank you, Vantage Medical, for showing your continued support. And to our audience, please connect with Vantage Medical, your precision partner for metals manufacturing. Visit vantagemedical.com. That's VANTEDGE medical.com. And now we bring you this episode's FOMO, my conversation with Maggie Dixon, CEO of Capstan Medical. Hello, and welcome to the future of MedTech. I have the absolute privilege of sitting down with Maggie Dixon, the CEO of Capstan Medical. Maggie, thank you so much for joining us on this future of surgical robotics.
It's awesome to be here.
So, Maggie, I always like to start my conversations with a little bit of background, but to make it really specific to surgical robotics, what about surgical robotics is so intriguing that brought you here today?
Yeah. So I had the absolute privilege of stumbling into surgical robotics back in 2000. I happened to get my first job with Intuitive Surgical, which was, you know, kind of has led the way in surgical robotics. And so I was a brand new engineer coming out of school and was connected through a babysitting family that I had.
Stop.
Power of networks, right? And was connected to Dan Wallace, who was leading the instrument team at Intuitive Surgical. And I spent the following 20 plus years there. And so really saw like how surgical robotics has evolved and how it has just really changed what you can do minimally invasively for patients. Yeah.
I was going to move on, but now I can't. You can't tell me that you had a connection through babysitting. So yeah. What about your education? Did that help support this role? Or are you just the best babysitter? And
no,
they knew that your potential was limitless.
So it's interesting. Every student that is finishing up their degree is all of a sudden trying to build a network and find connections into the industry that they want to be in. And so I had really wanted to be in medical device. I thought I wanted to be in like orthopedic implants and whatnot. I come from the Midwest. There's a lot of really incredible companies in the Midwest that are in that space. And I had gotten a mechanical engineering degree and was trying to find my way. When you have no network, you tap into every human you know. And one of the families that I was babysitting for said, I was at Stanford School of Business. I'll send your resume over to, you know, my graduating class. And that happened to have one of the VCs that was investing in Intuitive Surgical at the time passed along a resume saying, hey, there's a new engineer here, and somehow got an interview and went from there. Yeah.
Those are sometimes my absolute favorite stories because you don't know what you don't know what you don't know. And now, yeah. I mean, just looking at your face and how you're glowing when you think talking about surgical robotics, clearly you found a fit.
Oh, it was incredible. So I couldn't have asked for a better opportunity. You know, the company was small at that point. I think it was less than 100 people. And it was really in the infancy. I was on the original cardiac team.
What?
For Intuitive. I was working on mitral valve repair and cardiac revascularization back in the day when Intuitive was a cardiac company before they pivoted to the broad applications that they have these days. Yeah.
Well, speaking about broad applications, let's talk about some of the challenges when you do broaden a portfolio or you take on more. So when we think about surgical robotics today, mm-hmm. what do you see as being the primary challenges?
Well, how much time do
exactly.
we have, right? No, you know, robotics are complex. The interesting thing, how I view robotics, is that complexity in the technology is intended to be simple and streamlined for the user. It's letting them do things that are really challenging, but in an easier way.
More
but
there's, I had to.
But come on, you're not supposed to use that. But it's really trying to solve for what they're seeking to do clinically, make it more minimally invasive, less impactful on the patient with all the benefits of the interventions that are there. And that's where I think robots have an incredible capability to come in and be a powerful tool in the hands of clinicians in order to serve those patients. And so sometimes robotics feel really big and complex and whatnot, but I think that intention is to just be enabling clinically.
So I can definitely see like where the challenges are starting to crop up from what you're saying here. So if you are trying to take a technology and you're trying to meet the user, mm-hmm. so the clinician in this case, you know, how do you reconcile I'm thinking about the human factors part of it. Mm-hmm. So like, how do you reconcile making a tool part of the clinician?
Yeah.
Is that a challenge? And what do we do with that?
And so I think a lot of it is trying things out in partnership with clinicians. So some of it is having engineers that lean toward a clinical aptitude, a clinical skill set, and they can be an early user as you're going through the development. But then when you have something, it's about getting those clinicians in-house, trying things out, giving them different things to interact with, even during the development phase. Then once you kind of are settling on your architecture and your capabilities and your user interfaces, then you kind of move into the more diligently testing those to make sure that they are broadly applicable to many users. But I think it's involving those users early on in your development, for sure.
That definitely makes a lot of sense. And before we sort of shift to how the industry is responding, do any other challenges come to mind?
Yeah, I think I'm in the thick of it on a day-to-day right now. We're mapping out what our regulatory strategy is. Like these are, as we said, complex pieces of equipment. How do we partner with regulatory agencies in order to navigate the pathways effectively? In our product, we have an implantable as well as the robotic system. And so we're trying to navigate both of those elements in this space.
Mm-hmm. That is not a simple pathway forward. So I could see why there was some tension when I said the word challenge, because there's so many challenges around it, especially when, you started in surgical robotics, you said in 2000?
2000, yeah.
So we're at 25 years from now, but it still feels so new. Mm-hmm. And just because maybe the technology has really started to evolve 25 years ago doesn't mean that the regulatory pathways and how the industry accepts the technology has been 25 years.
Long. I think we're just scratching the surface on what robotics can bring to clinicians. And I think you're seeing that with the explosion of robotic platforms that are coming out there right now. I think it's because they're trying to optimize the toolkit for those clinicians to do the different things that they want to do. So
that sounds like one of the ways that the industry is responding to the challenges. Mm-hmm. So software as a service or some sort of a data integration. I mean, how's the industry responding to...
I think a lot of it is you're starting to see more companies like Capstan, right? You're seeing companies that Capstan is targeting structural heart. It's not trying to do everything. It's trying to bring a curated set of technologies to cardiologists so that they can better serve their patients' needs, right? So I think we're starting to see some specialization, but it's founded on those same core, enablers that robotics bring, integration of preoperative imaging into your procedures. It's bringing good fidelity of motion and control and precision into the interventions. Those are that's what we want to stock the clinician's toolkit with.
Definitely. You mentioned when you were kind of talking about the challenge and like the regulatory pathway. And then you mentioned partnering with associations. Mm-hmm. Is that another way that the industry is responding to some of these challenges by offering support, collaborative support?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's all about engaging early, like trying to work with, kind of the regulatory bodies in order to make sure that we're on target for what they would like to see coming from us. And I think it's part of our responsibility to educate those reviewers and regulators about what, your piece of equipment, as well as what's its intended use, how is it supposed to be performing? Because that's where we've gone really, really deep. And it's our job to make sure we're communicating that clearly.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's the perfect way to segue to really what is the future of surgical robotics. So you can look at it maybe in two parts. One, this hyper-focus, your specialty, what does the future look like maybe in the near future and then a decade from now? And then more broadly, what do you hope to see in surgical robotics maybe 25 years from now? You started 25 years ago, what about 25 years from now?
Yeah, I believe strongly what you're starting to see is people deeply understanding the core challenges that clinicians are having, whether or not it's surgeries or interventions or even diagnostics. I think there's just this deep appreciation for how, you know, a carefully curated set of technologies can make life easier, right? It's our job to understand those applications. And so what you're seeing balloon right now is going, you know, there's been some great headway made into what robotics can do, you know, with what we currently have. Now we're extrapolating that across so many different applications. And so I think we're going to continue to see, you know, kind of the options expand significantly, but I don't think everything will make it. Like, I'm hoping Capstan makes it, you know, with what we're trying to do, but I think you're going to get the clinicians are going to say, this is the right tool to do what I'm seeking to do. And they will select and kind of cull the massive field that's coming in.
So a broadening and then an edit down the mean.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I think it's going to happen.
Beautifully said, as always. So thank you again, Maggie Nixon, CEO of Capstan Medical, yeah. Capstan Medical. Thank you so much for joining us on The Future Of.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, Capstan Medical has a great future in medtech, and so does our upcoming guest, CMR Surgical. I had a chance to speak with Max Colella, the new CEO. He brings some interesting insights into the surgical robotics company and has some, I think, fascinating visions of the future. So let's get this conversation going with Max Colella of CMR Surgical. Well, Max Colella, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to unpack CMR's story. We've had the company represented on the podcast a few years ago, but you've had quite a few changes over there and lots to cover. So before we get into that, though, Max, you've got quite a pedigree in medtech and a bit in healthcare. I'd love to learn a bit about your story. How'd you find your way into the medtech industry?
Well, interesting enough, I started my career 33 years ago in healthcare, 29 years in medtech, and 4, I will tell you more later, in a provider environment. So I started with Johnson & Johnson. I spent 21 years in Johnson & Johnson, going through multiple roles in many different places in Europe. And after that, I joined my first British company, Smith & Nephew. Mm-hmm. I jumped from being in Central Eastern Europe, leading the entire medical device and diagnostic from Johnson & Johnson. I jumped to Smith & Nephew, and I went to the Emirates to run the emerging markets. From there, I moved to Asia Pacific, where I built basically the region for Smith & Nephew in Singapore. And after that, I came back to Switzerland to run EMEA with Smith & Nephew. So I was really doing well there. I was enjoying my time. As you can imagine, many adapters kept coming and offering similar positions, a little bit higher. And I always said, look, I'm not interested. I'm good where I am. Mm-hmm. But in terms of intellectual curiosity, I said I would love to have a stint or to have a challenge in the private equity world, because I would love to run a smaller company in a completely different environment. And I was lucky enough after 3 years in Zurich, 3.5 years in Zurich, I got an offer from TPG, the private equity, US private equity, and they asked me to run a company as a CEO, and the company was in the healthcare provider space, the company called Evercare. It was a $1 billion fund fully invested in private hospitals, 32 private hospitals,
wow.
more than 200 diagnostic centers and a number of clinics around the world. It was an amazing experience for me because, as you can imagine, after many years in medtech, I went, you know, I remained in the space of healthcare, but I went on the other side and I learned a lot. And it was quite a successful journey. In 4 years, we relaunched the company and we handed over to another private equity. And it was the end of my experience in that space. And immediately after, I got approached by CMR as a part of a succession plan exercise. They asked me to if I wanted to join the company at the beginning as a chief commercial officer. For it was planned 1 year, 1 year and a half. And in fact, after 11 months, I got promoted to the CEO job, and here we are. So this is the story of my healthcare life.
That's amazing. So I want to focus a bit on your experiences overseeing a medical device business in various markets across the world. What are the similarities between EMEA and between Asia Pacific, and what lessons can you carry from one sector to another? And then conversely, talk a bit about the differences. How different are those markets and their healthcare needs?
Well, as you can imagine, the healthcare market in these countries is at different stages. At the same time, I would say there is one thing that I have to recognize is universally true, is that you can run successfully business only through right people. Mm-hmm. This can be applied everywhere in the world. Higher you go into the hierarchy and more relevant is your ability to choose your team, to empower them, to have the right talent on board. So this applies to all the markets around the world. When it comes to, of course, the access to funding and to access to healthcare solutions, mm-hmm. is at a completely different stage between Europe and the rest of the world, and US is a completely different story. What I have learned is no matter what, growth is what matters. Of course, in the emerging markets, you aim for high double digit, triple digit, depending on the kind of business you are leading, growth. But in Europe, growing above market is and has been always the imperative of my missions, the various missions that I had in Europe and in countries like Canada, mm-hmm. and now in the US.
So, you've worked at two of the larger med techs. You now work at a surgical robotics company. I'm curious, as you're building business into these markets, how important are the names like Johnson & Johnson MedTech and Smith & Nephew? Is that a big part of the sell to those markets? Or how does a company like CMR Surgical or just another smaller med tech company sort of find its way into those markets? Is it similar to the U.S. and Canada? Is different? Is there a lot more weight given to the name Johnson & Johnson and the name Smith & Nephew?
Yeah, of course. I think that when you have the opportunity to work for these strong, powerful brands, you mm-hmm. realize that, trust is given.
Yeah.
In terms of credibility, is something that comes with the brand, even before the product. When you move to a smaller company, first you need to build your credibility around the world. You have credibility as a company. You have to build a clear image around your brand before going to the product and effectiveness and performance.
And I centered my question around those specific markets, but I'm sure that's true in every part of the world. It's the same.
Absolutely.
It's the same in the U.S.
Absolutely.
And I'd love to learn your experience running Evercare, coming from the medtech industry, going into the healthcare provider industry, what surprised you, sort of being on the other side, quote unquote, of the table, and what lessons did you walk away from that you're now employing at CMR Surgical? I'm sure the perspective was just extremely valuable.
Yeah. So first of all, as I said, Evercare was, of course, a private group. Mm-hmm. We ran private hospitals. My takeaway was, first of all, it was an amazing experience because all of a sudden you are on the other side and you can easily interpret all the messages and the inputs that you get from the industry when it comes to trying to sell new product, enter new market, and so on. So my takeaway after 4 years is, first of all, it's not easy to run hospitals. I mean, I was lucky enough to be leading the holding group, and therefore all the CEOs of the hospitals reported it to me. Mm-hmm. And I built a huge respect for these individuals because their job isn't easy at all. On daily basis, they have challenges, and although they focus a lot on the strategy and on executing the strategy, but managing hospitals is a day by day battle. And again, now that I'm back to this part of the industry, I approach them with more respect and more understanding of their needs. And when it comes to private hospitals, it's a B2B. However, I continue to stress one point. Regardless where you are, there or here, in the provider side or in this industry, at the end of the day, what matters is the patient mm-hmm. safety, what we do for the patients. And that's why I see the relationship with the hospitals as a partnership. So at the end of the day, we are here to serve and to do our best for the ultimate, I wouldn't call it customers, but mm-hmm. for the patients. So we can work together towards the best outcome and the best solutions for patients.
And how do you, and I know Evercare was kind of a unique organization with private hospitals, but how did the doctors and the employees and the folks that you connected with every day, how did they view MedTech? Do they see it as a solution, as something they're hungry for, as new technology, new solutions? Do they see it as a challenge and a disruptor and something that makes their everyday lives long term maybe easier, but short term, oh my gosh, I need to learn a new system. I need to change how I do things. Were you surprised at all at how technology is perceived by the providers, by the physicians, and by the nurses?
Slightly surprised. So I was surprised by the fact that they don't see the medtech companies on the medtech industry as suppliers. Mm. I have to say 90% of our investments at Evercare were in emerging countries. And the way they look at the medtech industry is an enabler to become better. To have access to standards and the golden standards in terms of all the procedures and all the instruments, all the products they can have access to better serve their patients. So I think again, I'm sorry if I repeat myself, but the key point here is that we. From both sides should look at what happened in the healthcare space as a partnership, mm-hmm. and this is what I've learned. And it's great. So I can tell you, we can go back later. But in 2019, I was there when we acquired the first three robots for our hospitals in India, mm. and it was a big thing because it was like displaying huge. Commitment to innovation in private hospitals in India, and after that we look at the best possible products in all the countries where we operated. And yeah, it's once again, it's a great opportunity to partner and to build the best options to the patients.
Excellent. Well, let's focus now on CMR. Well, final question about your career. Did you anticipate coming back to MedTech when you moved over to the provider side? Did you yes. see it as a short stint? It was, yeah.
Yes, yes. I always said so. But the question when I left Evercare, the only question I had to answer for me was to keep going or just starting with, you know, non-executive job or stuff like that. And I had multiple offers mm-hmm. at the time, even becoming an advisor, senior advisor for private equities. It was an option, but I realized that I'm still full into the business from an intellectual standpoint. The level of adrenaline that I need on daily basis is such that I can take this one and maybe even more in the future. So yes, I my idea was to come back to the industry, to the meta game.
I hear that about the adrenaline. All right, well, let's learn about a little more about CMR. As I mentioned, we've had you at our conferences before. We've talked a lot about Virseus, but if you wouldn't mind. Talk to me as if I know nothing about CMR. How would you describe what you do and give us a sense of what your Virseus system is and does?
Well, maybe I would start from the reason why I really loved the idea of joining CMR. What you should know is that for many years I've been a huge advocate of robotics. Mm-hmm. So I've been one of the most vocal in the executive team of Smith & Nephew at the time of acquisition of Blue Belt, vocal about entering the market and being number two after Mako, after Stryker. Mm-hmm. I saw that and I see that as a huge strategic move, and it was right. But even before, I was fascinated by what was happening since 2005 on the robotic surgical area. And maybe because I have young kids, and I see how digital is part of their life. I am fully convinced that although it's 25 years now, but we're just the beginning of robotic. Robotics will inevitably repeat the story of laparoscopy. You know, I'm old enough. And I remember the debates 30 years back, 35 years back about open surgery versus laparoscopy. And many people were saying, yeah, laparoscopy will at a certain point will probably be perceived and seen as an expensive solution that will take 20-30% of the entire surgical market. In fact, the story has shown that it's a completely different story. You build a market, competition brings, and we can touch base on this point later, but the importance of the competition that brings different solutions to the market, and with different solutions will bring also a different level of competitiveness, and the prices will inevitably go down, and there will be more opportunity to access robotics in the future. So I'm the reason why I joined is because hugely passionate about the robotics, but at the same time I see the opportunity. There are no many other markets in medtech that will be growing at this pace in the next decade. I wanted to be there. So CMR was for me a great choice. First of all, because is the second largest company in the market. Now you can argue by a huge distance from the number one, but it's also true that timing of entering this market matters. There is a normal cycle that you have to follow mm-hmm. before you have a fully stable, competitive, performing robot in the market. Nobody will go around it. I see many other companies coming and having the same experience that we have had in CMR in the last 5 years. It takes some, and you know, we can go back even many years back and see the same experience of Intuitive. So it takes some time before you have the right robot in the market. So CMR was by far the number two. It was all about turning around the business, which is something I'm truly passionate about. In fact, since 20 years, all the companies I've worked with, they always sent me to turn around business and to make sure that the business changed gear and start growing aggressively. So it was the great seat. And then I took some information about the technology and the development of the technology, the market. I said, yes, I will do that. And now CMR is, as I said, many times when I speak with journalists or people, they refer to CMR as a startup. CMR is no longer a startup. 37,000, almost 37,000 procedures, more than 200 robots in the market, 32 countries, the FDA approval, the new products, just Versus Plus, just launched. So it's a big react. And as I said, with the opportunity that we have, for me, it's all about two things. Is keep going with huge focus on R&D, make this product every day better, continue the evolution of the pipeline. We moved from generation one to Versus Plus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the near future, we're going to launch generation two. Huge focus on clinical outcome, huge focus on patients' benefit, and commercial effectiveness. These are the main, many others, but the main two areas of focus for me since I joined.
I'm going to pause this really quickly to bring you the conclusion of my conversation with this episode's sponsor, Vantage Medical. I wanted to talk about something that you mentioned the last time I had the privilege of sitting down with you. And I'm actually going to drop in the show notes the link to that interview because I think it was really fantastic. And one of the things that you had mentioned was how important the people behind the technology is, especially in medtech. And then I've been hearing more and more from leaders in robotics that the real differentiator isn't necessarily the technology, but it's the people behind that technology. So from your perspective, Cassie, what is the secret sauce at Vantage Medical that allows you to deliver in such a demanding field?
Yeah, Kayleen, I mean, I completely agree with that. Like, it's just, it is the people behind the companies that make them successful. And running a small family company myself for a few years, you know, I was so passionate and adamant about keeping the team the way that we had it set up. I mean, it was my team that made us successful. And still to this day, with Vantage Medical, I feel like we have that, you know, small family company feel about it, but have those large company resources backing us up as well. But it's the culture at Vantage. It's the grit. It's the craftsmanship. It's the passion. It's the drive. The machines, the technology, that's the easy stuff. It's the people behind it that really are making everything work.
Let's shift a little bit to surgical robotics platforms. So we know that they demand precision across everything from surgical instruments to large format carts and systems. From your perspective, what capabilities are most critical in solving these challenges?
Yeah, it's like there's so many pieces that have to come together to make a surgical suite, a robotic assisted surgical system to work, right? I mean, and you think about that, and to me, it's just mind-blowing. Like, how are there design engineers out there that really can dream this up and make it reality? And again, it ties back to the people, so we don't have to get into that. But at Vantage, what's really neat to me is that we are able to support all levels of a robotic-assisted surgery system. Like, that coming from the world of instruments and accessories prior to where I'm at today, that's all I knew. Now my world is opened up to so many different things. You know, at Vantage, yes, we have, you know, Swiss machining, high precision, multi-turn axis machining, high precision stamping, tool room fabrication. But then on the other side, it's that sheet metal fab. It's the larger format machining. It's still high precision, but there's so many things that Vantage is able to offer. And not just the machining portion of it. It's like we have those value add services too, where it's, you know, the cable harness assemblies, painting and the pad printing, all those things. And I think it's really, really neat that we do have that all-in-one kind of support that a customer can get everything they need from one company.
Looking ahead in the next 5 years, what excites you most about the future of surgical robotics, and how do you think it might transform the OR?
I think the most excitement that I get around where robotic-assisted surgery is going is that combination with AI. There is so much power behind that, and the technology, then combining it with the data that is able to be captured on past surgeries to help future patients. Like, this touches me on just a different level with seeing where the technology has been in the past and where it's at today. I mean, from a personal perspective, my dad, you know, was diagnosed with aggressive prostate cancer 13 years ago, and I see what he was given and treated with then and where we're at today. And it is like amazing. And then you combine that with where we're going with AI and all the other really exciting things that customers are, our OEMs are working on. I mean, it's amazing. It is truly amazing to see, again, the progression. But really, I think that tied to AI is going to be incredible. It really is.
One last thought. How is Vantage Medical going to continue to support the industry in the face of this really hopeful future?
Yeah, I mean, again, we'll kind of tie it back to just that culture that we have, that craftsmanship, that expertise, the grit, the passion, all of the things that Vantage has to bring to the table. I mean, we are there to partner with our customers and all the needs that they have now and in the future. I think we just want to be one of those suppliers that can really come to the table for them.
Cassie Hoppers, Global Director of Business Development for Vantage Medical, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. And thank you to Vantage Medical for supporting this episode of Device Talks Weekly. For our audience, I know that you are champing at the bit to learn more about Vantage Medical and to see the new logo. So please visit its website at vantagemedical.com. That's VANTEDGEmedical.com. And thank you again. I want to say thank you to this episode's sponsor, Vantage Medical, one more time. Without your support, we aren't able to produce Device Talks Weekly or tell these important stories. So thank you, Vantage Medical, for showing your continued support. And to our audience, please connect with Vantage Medical, your precision partner for metals manufacturing. Visit vantagemedical.com. That's VANTEDGEmedical.com.
So is the different design, the modular design, the portability of Versius, is that a primary selling point to customers, or do you rely upon the things you just listed, which are something every medical device company must provide, you know, effectiveness, cost effectiveness, et cetera. So how big does the design and the different approach of Versius compared to the market leader play into your story?
Well, I would say huge. You know, going back to what I said a few minutes ago, when I looked into the opportunity and I was offered the position, for me, the differentiation of Versius vis-a-vis many others was and is one of the key reasons why I believe in a bright future for this company. You mentioned the modularity, the portability, the versatility, also somewhat the dimension, but you know, I could add the by far the largest number of patents that we have, and we look at the future with huge optimism because of that, and all of this make Versius you know, very differentiated in a market that inevitably will become a little bit crowded in a while. We can position ourselves in a way that we can own and win in a specific part of this huge market. Now, we can argue how big it will become in 2030, 2035. You know, there are people say 30 billion, 50 billion, 70 billion. I really don't care. What I know is that if I look at the opportunity to position Versius and to win in a portion of that market, I can tell you that portion of the market is big enough to make CMR big.
How do you walk me through the sales pitch for Virsius when you're walking into a hospital? What are the benefits that you're making clear to them? How do you improve their patient flow? How do you lower their costs? Where is Virsius critical in doing all of that?
Yeah, we can look at this from a market standpoint. We can argue that the development of the robotic market in US, Europe, and the rest of the world is quite different. And therefore, you know, the way of positioning the product into the market has to be different considering the stage of evolution of the robotic programs. So what we do is normally, first of all, you need to understand if you are approaching an hospital or a customer, first time user of robotics. So that is a completely different story because you give them all the options to start their program, considering the fact that you can move the robot from one OR to another. You can give multiple teams, specialties, the opportunity to start trying at the same time by rotating the product among all the ORs. And what we normally do, we approach them by demonstrating the clinical outcomes, mm-hmm. the versatility of the product, the cost effectiveness, and also the and probably I go back a bit to the clinical outcomes, the benefit to the patient. So we normally start from the benefit to the patient and the importance of again focusing on that from both sides, from our side and the hospital side. It's a completely different story when we approach we approach segment of the market that are, I wouldn't say saturated, but already into the surgical robotic programs. So in that case, we show our complementarity to their programs. Mm-hmm. I can give you an example. I was a few months ago in front of a CEO of a huge hospital, and they started their robotic programs 10 years back, 12 years back, and they have 22, if not 24, ORs. And they had the first, the second, the third, and the fourth Intuitive. Mm-hmm. So at a certain point, everyone is excited in that hospital. Everyone wants to use it. But, you know, there are multiple specialties where still the volume is such that, you know, the guy said, clearly, I can't keep going this way. I cannot buy 24 robots and spend that amount of money. And the solution was Virsius, mm-hmm. is Virsius, because, you know, by taking one, we started accommodating the request of three different teams with relatively low, but not that low volume. And we are building on that. And they are planning for next year to buy a second mm-hmm. one. And the aspect of portability has played for them a huge role. And then we won a large number of tenders in the army hospitals, because one of the requirements for the army hospitals is, you know, we want to have something that we can move around, pack, and move from a side to another. So these are classical examples of complementarity where, you know, you leverage on your features in order to demonstrate that we are a super valid alternative.
Interesting. How do you see, we're talking a lot, I think the conversation seems to have merged or moved from surgical robotics to digital surgery. There's a broader conversation about the digital infrastructure that has to exist around the surgical robotic system to really provide the value to surgeons and to the hospitals. Where is CMR see that element fitting into Virsius's future? How are you building out the sort of the digital footprint?
I'm a big believer, and I'm sure that you will keep the secret if I tell you what I say very often to my team. I said, if I look at CMR in 5 years from now, I would like to be identified as a tech med company, much more than a med tech company. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. The medical side remain predominant, they remain very important, but I truly believe that the leapfrog from a technological standpoint is about digital, the use of AI. And I must say that Versus is very well positioned already. Our digital part is under-promoted. We haven't really leveraged too much on that side that is quite already developed. But I can also say that part of our new fundraising has been allocated to the development of all the digital solutions. And in the next 12 for 24 months, we're gonna have some interesting innovation in that area. So in a nutshell, what I want to say is I truly believe that digital will give us the opportunity to have an additional leapfrog vis-a-vis the others.
Interesting. So how do you see you mentioned earlier on how laparoscopic procedures overtook the surgery, the skepticism, the early skepticism. I think we've already done that with surgical robotics. I think the skepticism is past us. But you alluded earlier that you see parallels between the two. How do you see the surgical robotics market growing? How do you see its adoption by healthcare systems moving forward? And you've got two market. You've got Intuitive, and you've got yourselves as sort of entrenched leaders at this point. How do you see if you don't mind addressing the rest of the field, how do you see that all playing out? Because there's a lot of companies out there. They're not all going to be here in 5 years, and they're certainly not going to be here. Most of them aren't going to be here in 10 years. How do you see this all sort of unfolding?
Well, when I entered the SRS a few weeks ago, I was impressed by the number of companies exposing there. And my first thought has been, this is good. Mm-hmm. This is really good. And this is good because answering your question, I do see a further quick acceleration of the market penetration because of this competition. Seeing other big companies coming in, but also other small smart companies coming into the field, this is a huge opportunity to create a healthy environment where hospitals will fully see the opportunity. And you said it, Tom. You said there are no doubts about the effectiveness from a clinical standpoint of robotics. Mm-hmm. But what is still there is a big question mark about affordability. Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons why it is what it is in terms of penetration today is because of the affordability, the cost. I believe that a healthy competition in the next 3-5 years will give an opportunity to all the hospitals around the world to have access to it, and I'm sure that the growth of this market will further accelerate inevitably.
So, what do you see the surgical robotics world looking like in 5 years in terms of the number of players? And if I may ask, where do you see CMR's future in that as well? I mean, you did raise $200 million in April. There were reports in June that you were looking for a buyer. I don't know if you can address that at all, but where do you see CMR fitting into the future of surgical robotics? And what do you see that field looking like? Do you see 2 or 3 major players? Do you see 4 or 5 major players? It's hard to predict, but I'd love your opinion.
Well, Tom, as you probably have seen from my CV, I've been many years in orthopedics, and I see some similarities, not full, but I see some similarities in terms of market development. So, in terms of the importance of robotics for medtech, exactly as it was for the medtech companies, orthopedics and cardiovascular in the past. So there will be a huge focus from the medtech industry on this area of the business. However, what I want to say is Well, look, I really don't know if in 5 years from now there will be 4, 5, 6 players, no more than that. I do believe that the market will become big enough to have more than 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. This is what I think. When I look at CMR, and again, I'm sure that this will stay between me and you.
Guaranteed, I promise.
very often people ask me, do you believe that you can, in 5 years from now, you will still be the number two in the market? I honestly don't care. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I don't care is because we raised this $200 million because we have clear plans about how to execute our plan, and things are working. We don't disclose number, but what I can tell you this is the sixth consecutive quarter of huge growth, 3, 4, sometimes 5 times the market. And therefore, what matters to me is to keep going this way, because if I can keep growing 3, 4, 5 times the market in a growing market in the near future, I don't know if in 5 years from now, CMR would be number 2 or 3, but I know that CMR would be a very relevant player and a big one.
And how about the reports about you're looking for a buyer? Can you speak to that at all?
Well, I can tell you, I don't know from where that came, because it was an unneeded distraction for the team, because we were fully into executing the plan. So as you can imagine, raising $200 million is part of a process. So we went to our investors. We said we want to do this. We're going to break even. This company can go standalone and so on. And then all of a sudden we see that, and we spent days internally, because, you know, the rest of the world, you will never convince the rest of the world or whatever you say. They will always think that you are not saying what. But internally, I had to explain our people, said, good, there are no changes. Mm-hmm. Our plan is to execute this. And inevitably, as I said, if other big strategics one day would like to enter this market, they will look at CMR as well as probably some other companies, because our credibility is where it mm-hmm. is. It's very, very high credibility. And going back to the beginning of this interview, the famous cycle, we are very much advanced vis-a-vis many others. So, but it's not what we are busy with. What we are busy with is that execution. And again, once again, main two goals, R&D, acceleration, development of the generation 2 earlier than what we had previously planned, and U.S. market. Because as you can imagine, we're very proud of being probably the largest company, not only in terms of number of procedures, but also in terms of presence in the world with 32 plus countries. But we know when you play in MedTech, the name of the game is America. I think it's U.S. Mm-hmm. And entering the U.S. With the right approach, with the right strategy, humble, nimble, and fairly aggressive is one of the main goals for us.
Excellent. And just final question. We talked a bit about the tech, and I'm just thinking now about we've had a lot of conversations about telesurgery and those other capabilities. Do you see that as being part of CMR's future as well, or is that not necessarily where you need to focus? You're focusing more on sort of the nuts and bolts of bringing surgical robotics to the OR. How does all the more, I want to say futuristic, but we're seeing a lot of companies do telesurgery, so it's not futuristic anymore. How do you see that fitting into telesurgery and others fitting into surgical robotics more broadly, and to CMR's strategy specifically?
So when I came back from SRS, and you know, I don't know, 90% of the conversations at SRS were about the research. I called for a meeting with my R&D group, and I said, okay, guys, where are we? And I realized that we can do that relatively easy and quick. Mm-hmm. The capabilities are there. The technology is such that is not a big effort for us to get there. My question mark is that my priority? So we have to distinguish between telesurgery and digital and AI. For me, the priority number one is more the broader digital AI landscape rather than only telesurgery. Yeah. So telesurgery, we will get there if needed. But I want to be sure that in the meantime, we do not disperse our focus on getting the sort of digital solutions that enable a better outcome for patients. And again, I'm still educating myself about the importance of having telesurgery in the product list sooner than later. But I know that for us, the digital and the AI solutions in the future will represent, as I said, the way of having another leapfrog and to create a bigger gap between us and the followers.
No, that's a great point. I mean, I feel like we're in a bit of an echo chamber in medtech where we're all excited about telesurgery, but I don't know if the customers are asking about it as much as we are. I think everyone's amazed at what we're able to do, but I don't know if it has a large clinical application.
I see teleproctoring as an important, the way of help the market in developing itself through teleproctoring, the help of opinion leaders and great users to other first users. This is a great opportunity, and for sure I'm looking at it. But as I said, I don't want to jump to the conclusion that I know everything. I'm just trying to educate myself. What I know is that life is about priorities, and I just need to put that into the bucket list.
Awesome. This has been a great conversation. I promise I'll keep those things to our between us. And I love CMR's story. Competition is good, and it's great to hear where you're going in the future. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me. Thanks.
All right. Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Device Talks Weekly. Please do subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss a future episode. Please make sure you join us next Tuesday at our Device Talks Tuesdays with PSN Labs. You can go to devicetalks.com to register for that. You can also find the link to Device Talks West on devicetalks.com and register to join us at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Got a great 2 days. Go to west.devicetalks.com to check out the agenda, check out the speakers, and make sure you use the code DTWeekly25 to save 25% off the price of registration. Can't wait to see you there. All right, folks, without any further, well, I guess one last thing I'll ask is just to connect on LinkedIn. We love to be part of your MedTech conversations. Please share this episode on LinkedIn and make sure you connect with myself, with Kayleen Brown, and with Chris Neumarker. All right, that is it. That's all I have to say. Thanks so much for being part of Device Talks. We'll be right back.